This is an interview with Battalion Chief Joseph Quinn for Youngstown State University Oral History Project. Particular interview being the Youngstown Fire Department by Mike Grillo at Fire Station Number 8 on Market in Glen Haven on July 8th at approximately 2:45. Chief Quinn, could you provide some information on your family background and your schooling?
Family background. Family are from Youngstown. I've been from the Civil War days, I suppose. And my father is a fireman. We grew up on the east side. I was 9 years old and then moved to the north side. I went through St. Edward's Parochial School, Rain High School, then went into the service during World War II. Upon returning, we're General Fireproofing Company. Came on the fire department in 1950.
Okay. What occupations were put in before becoming a fireman?
I started out wanting to be a golf professional, like most young fellows do, and I worked at General Fireproofing for 2 years before World War II. And when I returned, I went back to work at General Fireproofing. And that's about the only place I worked too, before I came out here.
1950. Why did you become a fireman?
Well, again, when I went to service, I was unmarried. I got married, came home on furlough, got married to my wife during service. After the war, I was faced with a situation of a family. No college degree, and my chances of going to college then were nil. So the work I was production line work, and I was looking for a more pleasant line and a longer lasting line. So my thoughts turned to civil service type work of post office or fire police, and I took the examination for a fire department and was appointed in 1950.
What do you remember about your first years in the department?
Very enjoyable. I worked the first years at the Falls Avenue station, station number 4, near Oak Hill Avenue. I had a very good captain, Captain Dalby. Fine crew. They taught me well. We didn't have an organized training program as such at that time. It was left up largely to the captain, your district chief. They mother hen me would be a good word. And taught me very well, I would say. It was informal type of thing, but they touched on all the necessary things for my own safety and the use of the tools and what fire was all about and how to cope with it. Generally, I'm thankful to them. They were a fine crew. I stayed there until I went to the alarm room, and then I was promoted to engineer in 1956.
And then were you appointed chief?
I was appointed chief in 1971. After engineer rank, I was at the Belmont Avenue station from 1956 to 1963, at what time I was appointed captain, and I went to a number 7 station at Madison and Elm Street, and then transferred in, I believe, 1968 to number 1 station as captain, and in 1971 as appointed a battalion chief.
What are the duties and responsibilities of a battalion chief?
Well, the town is divided into 2 battalions. We are structured along military lines that we borrow from the military. We have companies. And the National Fire Protection Association put out recommendations and standards, and their standards state that a district chief or battalion chief cannot handle more than 8 companies efficiently. So we, having 14 companies, need 2 battalions. So what we do is divide the town into north and south, roughly by the river. And the assistant chief is in charge of the north side battalion, plus the overall charge of the city. And the battalion chief is in charge of the south side battalion. It comprises six companies, and so I'm charged with the efficiency and the operation of those six companies and the staffing of them. There's three men report off at one station, I follow from the other station to keep a kind of station man, and I respond to the alarms of fire, and at the alarms of fire, I generally coordinate the activities, and I suppose where to supervise the activities of the companies. And when we need additional manpower or additional equipment, that is my job to get the tools and the necessary appliances for the men to do the work.
Mm-hmm. Could you describe the operation of the alarm system? Say I was to go out on Market Street and I would go to a pole and pull the alarm, what would happen?
Well, we have two types of, or two means of communicating. Number one is, as you say, the box alarm on the poles. That's divided into a series of, well, it'll be the same as your Christmas tree lights in a series a type affair. There's so many boxes on a circuit, and there are 16 circuits in town. So if you pull that box, it is always energized, and it activates a wheel within it that will ring a bell down in the alarm room on a coded type of arrangement. And it codes, for example, the box 4366. It would come in that number, and then the gentleman at the alarm room looks up the number and sees the location and dispatches the trucks to that location. So every box in town has a specific number, and that is why the insurance underwriters like them so much, because they don't get misinformation, they get an exact location. And that's the way that alarm would be pulled. When you pull it, it starts the wheel going, and it comes in on a tape, a ticker tape down at the alarm room, and the man looks up the numbers and responds. The other way you get the alarm is through telephone, and that way they ask mainly the address that you're concerned with, and you then dispatch the trucks that would cover that area.
What constitutes a multiple alarm fire?
Well, first of all, in a regular alarm, as we speak of, we dispatch in our residential areas three pumpers and a ladder truck and a district chief or battalion chief's car. The downtown district gets a few more, what they call a high-value district, it's a few more trucks than that. Then when they find they're in need of more men and equipment than what they have available to combat the condition, they send in what they call a second alarm, which is responded by an identical number of trucks. If you get four on the first, you get four more on the second, and if necessary for a third alarm, you'd get four more the same way.
What are the differences and similarities of the type work done by the chief, assistant chief, and battalion chief?
Well, the chief is the administrative head of the department. His duties are administrative, I would say. He lets most of your firefighting up to the assistant and battalion chiefs. He runs the office. There's all the records. He's the go-between or the, I'm trying to think of a word, the coordinator between the city hall, the council, and the mayor, and the fire department. He looks after the management of all the men insofar as their payroll records, their sick leave, their vacation records, the assigning them to stations, the appointing of people. The request for money and funds City Hall is all goes through him. The purchase of everything for the fire department is his. It's a very complex job. All records and reports are his responsibility. They have to go to the state and the various things. All the legal aspects of the department and the when you're dealing with 250 people such as this, it becomes very complex. And he's the one that has to have the answers to what we do to set policy. For example, everything is on the fire department. and to coordinate policy with the mayor, with the council. So that's his job is largely that. He does respond to all second alarm and higher fire. But again, he gets there depending on what the chief's nature. Some of them like to personally take charge. At present time, this Chief Pano leaves most of your actual firefighting up to the assistant chiefs, who will there be to help to coordinate with other departments to get things done that the assistant chief can't do, that is, call out special equipment from, let's say, the street department or private contractors or things if we need them. Now, the assistant chief's role is, number one, he's a district chief, the same as a battalion chief would be. He responds to fires in his area. He is, in addition to this, in charge then of the entire city. If questions come up that would be have to be answered higher than the battalion chief, then it would be referred to him. So then, in other words, as myself, I work with Chief McGovern as the assistant chief. If I wanted something in this battalion, it's fine, providing it doesn't conflict with the policy set up by Chief McGovern, the assistant chief. Do things under his heading. He also has, the assistant chief also has some staff functions that are assigned to them by the chief of the department. They're called in more than the battalion chiefs to sit down and counsel the chief on various matters of the fire department, on setting up strategy and pre-planning various responses and things of this nature. And their advice is sought by the chief on the purchase of equipment and in running the department with their expertise and their longevity on the job, their counsel is sought. And the battalion chief, as I say, is in charge of the district, the Southside District in Youngstown, and he has six companies to look after and respond to alarms and fires with them and see that they're working in an efficient manner.
You mentioned earlier that the type of training you received was drawing upon the experience of your chief at the station, and I think referred to as a mother hen approach. Well, how does this differ with the incoming fireman today in training?
Well, we still, for a period of, I would say, 2 or 3 years, you have to mother hen people through some touchy situations, naturally, until they encounter serious problems and know how to conduct themselves and what's going on. But we also now have a formal 4-week training program that they go to school 40 hours a week for a total of 160 hours. And they're taken out, use all the equipment on the department, and shown how to use everything. They learn theory of firefighting and chemistry of fire and the various aspects of firefighting. And then they're assigned to a station. And so this is, as I say, they're better prepared today to take their position as a member of a company than they were 20 years ago because of this formal 4-week training. And I say there's still a lot to learn after they get to a station, actually.
And is this an ongoing procedure? Every so often, do they have to still take so many class hours or some such?
And it is not mandatory at this time to take further training. Although they do, everybody who wishes to move up in the ranks has to get into books. There is a training program set up. There's one battalion chief is in charge of training. At present time is Chief Wittenberger. He sets out guidance for the various captains, the areas they want them to touch upon during the year, along with bringing movies around and slides presentation on various hazards and techniques and so on. So there is an in-training program in that respect. It's not you pull them out of the station and put them in a classroom. It's not that type of thing, but the captain is to conduct these 2 hours a week in every station and go over the different slants of firefighting.
Could you describe a typical day in the on duty of Battalion Chief Quinn?
All right, our work shift is a 24-hour shift. We work one turn and are off two, so So in other words, every third day we rotate the year round. And we relieve one another at 8 o'clock in the morning. So our turn is called A turn, is A, B, and C. I report, as I did this morning, at 8 o'clock. I converse with Chief Kayaz, is the chief on C turn, whom I relieve. He brings me up to date on everything that has happened and what is presently active on the roster and in the department. And then I assume the position in the car. And the first thing is I get a report from the stations to see their manpower situation, if people are off sick or if everybody's up to date. And sometimes necessitates shuffling men back and forth the station so that they're all manned properly. I then usually confer, sometimes just briefly, sometimes more in depth, with Chief McGovern, the assistant chief, to see what his plans are, what's on the schedule for the day. For example, the next day we work will be Friday. We're scheduled at 9 o'clock to go up to St. Elizabeth's Hospital and sit down with the Mr. Sherrill, who was in charge of their safety program, and discuss with this new building our approaches and our responding to alarms in the building. We do this yearly at St. Elizabeth's, and so that's on the morning, the agenda the next day. But our thing of this nature to go over. Then, like when this type of thing is done, I'm here in the station to, this is the headquarters, number 8 station for the battalion chief. So when any of the stations want to get in communication with me, I'm here to answer their needs and do it, and respond to alarms like other companies. And that's about the situation.
What do firemen do their free time at the station?
Well, morning is cleanup time. Always, usually start off most stations with a cup of coffee. And after that, you clean the apparatus if they've been out in the runs the night before. They clean the station. Mop down the floor, and the kitchen, bathroom, and bedroom areas are cleaned every day. Beds are made. If anything is going on in the department training-wise, it's usually in the morning, if it can all possibly be done. So their morning is pretty well reserved for fire department activity. There may, if they were out the evening before, then when the turn comes in tonight, they just throw the hose down cellar, then the morning crew is to clean it and get this all done. So this is done generally to noon. Afternoon, their time is generally their own unless something is scheduled to be in a station. They wish to read or occupy their time best they can. Mm-hmm. But they must remain in the station or its near environments to be able to respond to any alarm or fire that happens.
Now, do you remember your first fire?
I can't particularly recall the first one, but the first few of a good extent I can recall.
Well, what can you recall about those?
I can recall, and I often refer to them now, and because I'm called upon to help in our 4-week schooling to help train them, what it's going to be like going to fire. And for a new man, it's organized confusion, I believe would be the best way to describe it. There's 4 trucks pulling in a chief's car in rather rapid succession, within a minute or two of one another, pulling into a fire scene. And there's not too much communications spread back and forth. It's usually pretty well pre-planned what you are to do in certain situations. And everybody off the truck and working hard, and to a man who doesn't know the formula, it seems everybody just running around doing what they want to do, and it doesn't look like too much organization, and as I say, an awful lot of confusion. Some are carrying ladders, some are pulling hose, some are busting windows, doing various activities, but firstly, if you stand there in the bewilderment, you say, my God, what's going on here, you know, but then you find that it is an organized pattern. Each company are assigned specific areas of responsibility to cover, and they're taking care of their area, ignoring the other companies because they're busy doing their thing. And the chief is there, the district chief, to coordinate the activities, and that's generally what you go in. But as I say, the first couple, as we call decent working fires or working fires, you just, your head is swimming because you can't make heads or tail of just what the heck they're attempting to do. And but it becomes clear after a while, it becomes clear just what everybody was attempting to do.
Has firefighting changed radically in the years with the advance of new chemicals and plastics and all of these new materials? Has firefighting changed any?
I would say yes and no. It has not changed insofar as we still jump on a truck, just as they did with the horse-drawn equipment. We now have better type of equipment. We still use water hooked up to a fire hydrant, spread a run a hose. Although again, it's improved a little bit. The type of hose, everything, the type of nozzle has improved pretty much. But again, we're absorbing the heat with water 90% of the time. There are some chemicals that have been introduced, but not generally used because of various reasons. Cost, water is generally considered the best distinguishing agent and for all around purposes. We now have better type aerial ladders, a basket we can put people in and put them up to windows where we didn't have it previously. This type of equipment is generally improved, but basically it's the same thing that they've been doing for years with just some refinement. They speak of breakthroughs, going to different things. I don't know how far they can do it. It's something you have to finally just in and absorb the heat some way and rob it from the fuel that is burning and separate the two, and it's a dirty, nasty inside job most of the time. But that is the no factor that it hasn't changed. On the S factor, there's no question the spray tips, the fog water we're using, we're not using 1/4 the water that we used 25 years ago in extinguishing similar fires. It's more refined equipment, and yes, we are making progress in that areas. And as far as the type of things burning, it changes continually. We're into plastics now that are an entirely different thing than the wood and lath and that we had burning previously. It's a and your chemicals, you get into gases that it's compulsory that we wear protective gear for our breathing because these things will kill you much quicker than they did 30 years ago. And so it is changing, and it is a different problem, yet it overall is not. It's pretty much the same problem.
What injuries did you incur during your career?
I'm very thankful that they've been minor. A few cuts and stitches here and there, but nothing of any major consequence. Where I've been knocked off a ladder was where I was able to land my feet and not get injured and things. I've been very, very fortunate in this respect. I've just been in the right place at the right time, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Did you participate in any of the major fires in the Youngstown area?
Oh, yes. Second and third alarm fires. St. Columbus Church, I suppose, is down. Before that, the first big one I can remember is a Trudley fire where the did some urban renewal there where YMCA swimming pool is right now. We burned the building down. We had the plywood fire a few years ago out on Meridian Road. Offhand, I can't think of, but there's been a couple dozen second and third alarm fires responded to. After you get set up, but those are usually easier. You're just squirting water. The nasty fires, your inside fires where you have to go into the smoke and try to dig it out is the toughest fire in the person physically, but the most spectacular, of course, are your million-dollar fires.
Right. One thing I found particularly interesting in talking to some firemen in previous interviews, and that was the designation of fast and slow house to different stations. And This interested me, and how do you account for this, that some sections of the city have a reputation of having a fast or slow house?
Well, it's very unique. This station here is considered a fast house now. It's on Market Street because we're in what we call a fire district. there's a lot of factors. The age of the homes, the condition of the homes would no doubt have a bearing on it. I believe the type of people, I'm firmly convinced of that. There's an old rule of thumb in the fire service, a clean home doesn't have fires. And it's true, I believe it's habits that people get into. If you're a sloppy type of individual and sloppy in your mental makeup, it makes and it breeds fires. In neighborhoods where people are very careful about their property and very careful about their house and everything is in order, there's a minimum number of fires. There are, of course, always going to be that exception, there's going to be fires. But I believe this has a lot to do with the frequency of fire calls. I say the physical condition of such, the age and everything, no doubt has a bearing. Your compact living conditions would have to have a bearing. In some areas, they're just crammed in and they're not suited for the type of occupancy we have. Modern apartments that are at, let's say, Ornersburg, we have a big apartment complex there. Well, that type of thing, the way that people are arranged and their conveniences is not the breeding grounds of the fires that you would have, say, in a duplex where there's four families trying to crowd in and they're living in with one another, and a bunch of kids that maybe the parents have to work and are left unattended at times. All these things tend to make it.
Now, what other emergency situations other than firefighting is a typical station capable of handling?
Well, number one, each truck has an inhalator, an oxygen inhalator. So if people recall in that area for oxygen, the truck will go out for this. There's on wrecks, they'll go out, the squad truck has particularly tools that are adapted for this thing, but the closest pump company will respond also to these situations. And aid in first aid manners, and along with your ambulance crew now, would be more suited to that. But the pump company responds in these areas and assists the squad and the ambulance in these things. This type of thing, we get into people locked out and things of that nature. Childbirth has been called upon at different companies. People can't make it to the hospital and they stop at a firehouse. And on any given moment, you're liable to be called on to almost any type of a situation. We don't get them that often, but it's amazing what situations you can get called into.
So there's a close relationship between the fire department and the police department within the city?
Yes, I would say there's close. There's it's like Army and Navy, probably. There's certain rivalries and certain distinction between them. But yes, I believe we have a fine relationship with the police in the city. And they assist us with fires and control traffic and so on. And they call upon us, give us notices of what's going on quite often, weather conditions, for example, in the winter, to get chains on, do this type of thing. I think our relationship with the police in Youngstown is a rather good one.
Mm-hmm. Now, what type of investigation follows after the extinguishment of a fire?
All right, that's one of the battalion chief's duties, is after fire, to seek the cause and to make a report on the fire, to determine the cause, and make a rough estimate of the damage, the loss incurred. Then if it's, fire follows a predictable pattern. Generally in a room you can, with some degree of skill, can isolate where the fire began and what the cause was, or get down pretty close to this. If it follows a normal pattern and everything seems to be in place, then a normal report is bad, a regular report. If it does not add up, if all the components are not there, the answers are not there, I should say, to show where the fire began, then we report it to the fire investigator, which would be Captain McDermott and arson investigator Seth Stone, telling them something out of place. We think this needs further investigation. And then they will respond and go over it with more of a fine-tooth comb to see if it's possible arson, or we'll report either suspicious fire or something that's in the time allotted us to investigate. We just can't come up with a logical answer, because our besides getting this preliminary estimate of cause and damage, our duty is to get the companies back into service and to get back into service ourselves for the next alarms.
You mentioned that there were 14 companies which compose the Youngstown Fire Department. How large are the boundaries of each of these stations? Have they changed over the years to encompass more territory, or are they pretty much the same? For example, how long would it take you to get to the perimeter of your boundary?
Well, the perimeter of each company is rather large because there's three companies responding as a general rule, and they will go in various combinations. For example, number 8 pump company out of this station will go down as far as Woodland Avenue on the north, and they'll respond to the entire Brownlee Woods section in the southeast. And they go over to the west of, or east of South Avenue, and go as far as Glenwood on the west. So it's a large area. Now, where they're first in district, that is where they're the first company in, isn't that large. They'll respond to some areas that they're the second company in, and as in Brownlee Woods, it would be the third company in. There'd be two companies that would be there before them. So each company has the same situation. Now, I said 14 stations, or actually 18 pieces of equipment that we have, because we have the three ladder trucks and the squad truck along with the pumper companies. And so that is what we do now. We get number 4 pump runs out of the same station here at number 8. Now their district, again, they includes downtown. They're one of the that responds downtown up as far as the tracks, the north edge of downtown. And they then stop at South Avenue on the east, and they go to Cornersburg area southwest corner. So each station has pretty much the same situation, where they'll be first in certain areas, second in the more, and then third in a certain area.
Is there ever any overlapping of jurisdiction? Say, for example, in Borden Township or Austintown Township, you would have an unusually large fire. Could the Youngstown Fire Department be called in such a situation?
Yes, we could be called in, and they can be called into Youngstown. We have no, this is to the best of my knowledge, we have no formal reciprocal agreement with them, as they call as the various, say, Austintown and Borden have with each other. But on request of our chief, to their chief, they certainly respond to our needs. And the same thing, for example, in Borden area or Austintown, if they have a situation where they need some of our equipment, or that it's too large for them to handle, and what companies they have can't handle it. All that would have to be done is their chief to call our chief, or the chief on duty, which would be the assistant chief, and request apparatus and men, and that would be sent to him. It has been done, and it certainly gladly would be done in the future. And as far as jurisdiction, there's no arguments much there. Our jurisdiction ends at the city boundaries. If we're responding to Boardman, for example, would respond and be under his direct supervision. That is, he'd tell us what he wants us to do. Now, our officers would direct our men, but it would be under his strategy, or his tactics and strategy or plans. We wouldn't go in and take over his fire for him.
I see.
That's his fire, which it should be. And the same thing coming into Youngstown. If they come into here, they would come to the chief in charge of the fire and say, what do you want us to do? And we'd tell them what. Now, their officers would direct their men in the tactics of how to carry this out, but they would under the overall strategy and tactics of the chief in charge of the fire.
Mm-hmm. How much risk do you believe is involved in firefighting?
Quite a bit. It goes down. The occupation of firefighting is listed as one of the most hazardous, and there's several reasons for it. Number one, the type of work we're doing, the conditions we're working under, is inducive to injuries. We're working a large time in smoke, in the dark, where things are either partly destroyed, falling apart. Glass is being broken, is prevalent around the area. you get boards falling down and this type of thing. So then you're crawling through a burnt out area, so the chance of injury is great.
Pardon me?
And in wintertime, you're getting the icy conditions and so forth where people slip and squirting water in the wintertime, you can see where there'd be a risk. Without vigilant, but either in smoke or at nighttime, you have a certain risk. In addition to that, I think would cause that we're in a hurry. Now, possibly we can find fault with our own actions. Maybe we're in too much of a hurry sometimes. But the very nature of the work, it can't wait till tomorrow. You have to get it now, or you're going to have a larger problem on your hands. So the very nature of your work, you're working in with some degree of speed, and you're working under adverse conditions. So it does make injury more susceptible to the fireman, or more susceptible to injury in this line than in many others because of these conditions, I believe. And another with the, they've taken with heart particular farmers susceptible to heart injury. They go from rest to a heart rate of up to 195 beats a minute in a matter of a minute or a minute and a half. And the doctors say this is a very extreme situation on a heart. And you're working in a heat, in an oven atmosphere a lot of times with your clothes on and inside the thing. You're working in foul air, which is, and you're breathing heavily, working hard. It all adds up to a health hazard on your body.
Watching TV these days, one sees that during this period of quote-unquote recession, the incident of arson fires has increased greatly. Was arson prevalent in the 40s and 50s in the Youngstown area?
Yes, but nothing like today. There's always been a certain degree of it. There's multiple number of causes for this. Number one, we believe now, a lot of it is monetary value. People have property that is no longer profitable to them, so they're turning to burning it for money, or to get rid of it for certain reasons. You have a certain, I suppose you use the word elements of our society, who are antagonistic for various reasons, and they're burning it down out of spite. They're burning places down. In the inner city, you're getting a situation on vacant houses where they are becoming not only eyesores, but health hazards and hazards for the children. And they're burning them to get rid of them in this manner. They want them torn down and out of there. And it's another reason. Automobiles in particular, they can't make payments today. They're burning the cars to collect insurance to get out from under. It's much more prevalent today than it ever was since I've been on, and for a number of these reasons.
Have the benefits of firemen improved on an equal footing with other occupations over the years?
They generally lag behind, naturally, because we're not a profit and loss type of organization. The income to the city is limited. When prices tend to go up, if you're out raising a business, you can raise your price and pass it on to the consumer and pay your employers more. It's difficult for the city to do this. So it tends to make the civil service employee lag behind, although they have been attempting to keep step with the general trends in the public. But it does seem to fall, when you get inflationary spirals, falls farther and farther behind. And depending, again, a city such as Youngstown is not growing. It's decaying. There's less people today than there was 30, 40 years ago in the city. So there's less of a tax base for them to get money from. Now, some cities where it is expanding, the town's getting larger, then they're on the other foot, and they have money to take care of these things. But in Youngstown, unfortunately, we're in a situation where the tax base and the revenues coming into the city seem to be on a declining scale, and the needs for them going out seem to be increasing. And the cheese gets rather binding at times.
Now, do you feel, drawing upon your experience as a for firemen, that the four-man staff at a station per shift is adequate?
Yeah, generally, yes. Four-man, now, four-man on the truck is adequate. But four-man assigned to a house is not four-man on a truck, because you have vacation periods, sickness, various things to that depletes this force. If we don't have any fires, you don't need anybody at the station. Or maybe one person to answer the phone. But when a fire occurs is when you need the people. And in those first 5 minutes of setting up operations at a fire, it is absolutely essential that we have enough men to do the job adequately. One and two men responding on a truck cannot put heavy appliances and heavy duty equipment into use. It takes more men than this. Or to elevate it to second, third floors and things of this nature. After you once get things arranged and get under control, again, don't need all this men. But to get the thing into operation, if four men can do, for example, five men on a truck can do more than two three-man crews coming with two trucks. They're better organized, they're better unified, they know how they're working. One man is giving them all orders rather than splitting the commands. There's various reasons for this, but it's been proven time and again in the service that the more men on the truck, the more efficient the operation goes, up to a given point, of course.
What goes through a fireman's mind when the alarm sounds? Over the years, as you put more years in service as a fireman, do you ever lose that feeling of anxiety that the bell's about to ring?
No, not really, I guess, because there's a certain frequency, I guess, that we've become indoctrinated with of fire response. And if you get beyond what your body tells you is a should be an alarm every certain so many hours or minutes or days, you get a little anxious. You think it has to happen. It's got to come. And you get a little anxiety feeling. You probably never lose this. You try to, with as you go in years, you become more accustomed to it. You probably don't get as uptight, as they say, as you do when you're first on. But I think the anxiety always stays.
Drawing upon your experience, do you have any observations or suggestions that you could make in firefighting or the operation of a house or just in the general operation of the fire department in general?
My, that would probably cover volumes to go into this, but just in briefly as I possibly could, if the men, again, can get into the attitude and habits of working just like it's another job, go about it like anybody else would go about their job, and not in that state of pretension that you get in the bell, because where bell rings and you're going fast, you're going down the street fast enough, it tends to speed the heartbeat and make rush. They'd do much better work if they could relax and take it as just another ordinary job. I don't know what other advice. The more knowledge you have about the job, the better you're able to cope with things. There's no schooling and training is absolutely vital to compete with the fire problem. The things that are burning are changing. The methods that they have to be attacked with are changing. You have to be up to date on this. At the scene of an emergency, there's no time to be bluffing your way through. Particularly if you have men sent to your care, and you're bluffing, you're risking their lives. There's no substitute for a good knowledge of what is needed and what has to be done in a given situation. It's very vital. And that's roughly, I think, what I could best describe.
And you want to make any closing comments?